Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome all. Don't be afeared. and join us here at Erie House Radio. And I'm Dale Kay here with my guest, co-host, or permanent co-host, still trying to figure that out, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you, Dale. Had a really great and interesting time last time you did this last week here on the Erie House Radio doing the The lights out, everybody.
Ooh, that was fun. And tonight we've got a great thriller as well. It's The Hermit's Cave, Vampire's Desire. And search as I might, I couldn't find the original broadcast date. But it's roughly around
most of the surviving. There aren't many recordings that survive, and the ones that do survive are really from the. The ones that they did on the West Coast, although it was the same writer, exec, basically producer. So what you're going to hear on almost all the Hermit's Caves that you will hear survived from the 1940s to...
What the heck was that?
See what happened here? Yeah. See, smartphones aren't always so smart.
Hey, it gave us a little extra musical interlude. Why not?
Yeah, that was not what we were looking for here. Let me throw that in the drawer here, so hopefully it won't go off again.
Just like old-time radio, it's live, folks. It's live.
It's live, folks. And, from the 1940s, I think 40 to what? 40... Basically, 40 to 47 of the recordings of Survivor from that time. But you're right, I have not found a log of the individual shows. They have a lot of listings of them. But not many of them actually have the dates. So it's.
Yeah. There's other shows that are like Suspense, like. Lights Out that are well documented, but this one's a little tougher to find. But boy, they're very, very entertaining.
Yeah. And of the list that I have here, only like five of them have dates on them. So it's, this is an interesting show. It started off again, about 1930? And pull my dates around here. 30 to 36, but we're talking about they were only 15 minute shows at that time, and that's really where the character of the Hermit came in. And again, we had talked about on there how you found this ad that you showed. It was out of WJR Detroit, part of the Mutual Broadcasting Network.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
at the time,
believe it or not. Believe it or not, that article came from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram out of Elyria, which is not far from where I'm at, but it's west of Cleveland, but it was announcing for Cleveland Radio.
That was on the WGAR, you said?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Which was, at the time, one of the most powerful stations in the area.
It was. It was a 50,000... watt clear channels, what they used to call it before this company came and called themselves Clear Channel, which became iHeartRadio. There were only a certain amount of stations and one in each area that were allowed to be 50,000 watts. The reason for that was they were to be basically designed as your emergency stations. In case of an emergency, those are the stations they direct you to because they were the most powerful. There were times, listening in the 1970s, I'd go to my dad's radio. He had one of these big radios like what you show on your picture there. And I could pull in New Orleans, their 50,000-watt station, Cincinnati's 50,000-watt station. Every once in a while, you hear New York and Philadelphia. Some of those you can even get in on your car radios, you know. And that was the reason that there were only just so many of the 50,000-watt clear channel stations.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you, this character, the Hermit, I wanted to ask you this. Do you feel he was almost a prototype of the other types of hosts for creepy stories, like the Crypt Keeper, both in the comic book and later on the HBO series? And really, one could trace the horror host's roots to these types of characters and these types of radio shows, along with the old-time spook shows.
When you consider that these, this started in 1930, this probably was, this even predated The Witch's Tale. This probably was the very first, in a sense, horror-hosted show. And their show was on radio, not on, and the movies weren't doing it like this, and the nobody else in radio was doing anything like this. It was, you're right, this is the granddaddy.
Yeah, and dear listeners, who I want to just say hi to in the chat, CW and Gar the Ghoul, before we begin our part one of a two-part episode, we're going to take a break about halfway through, maybe take some calls or just chat a little bit more about the Hermit's Cave. And this episode is called The Vampires,
the Mummers,
Desire.
In the Little Theater of the Air.
Now the Hermit is ready to help you spend an entertaining half hour.
Ghost stories. Weird stories. And murders, too. The Hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. You heard the story of Vampire's Desire, eh? Then listen while the Hermit tells you the story.
Forbidding-looking place, Mr. Winton?
It is at that. We can't go any farther in this downpour.
We shall most likely have to stay in this doorway, then. The house looks untenanted.
Does it that? However, there may be someone in.
There's no one living in this tomb of a place, Mr. Winton.
I think you're right, John. I wonder where we are.
I haven't had the slightest idea where we are since the beginning of the storm when we lost our way.
I think you're right about the place being untenanted. Try the door. Maybe we can break in. Anything to get out of this storm. Try the door.
Yes, sir. Oh, it's opening.
Oh, good.
Well?
Good evening. We've lost our way, been caught in this storm. We're drenched to the skin.
More fools you for being out on a night like this.
Very agreeable, sir.
May we come in and get dried out?
You're not welcome.
Well, surely you're not going to turn us away on a night like this.
I don't care what kind of a night it is. You're not welcome.
Well, all right. May we come in, whether we're welcome or not?
No. Good night.
She's slamming the door in your face.
Kindly soul.
When the old woman tried to slam the door, I stuck my foot in the way, and she hasn't tried to close it anymore.
Well, good. Let's take a chance on going in, then, whether we're welcome or not.
All right, sir. Now, which way, Mr. Winton?
Who can tell in this pitch darkness? Listen.
The old woman.
Yes.
Mr. Winton, we're in the house of a mad woman.
It isn't a very pleasant sound, is it?
Doesn't seem to be a light in the whole place. What shall we do?
We'll go to the right. Feel along the wall for a light switch or a door.
All right.
Come along, then. Follow me. Here's a door. stay close by me.
Yes, sir. Oh, good Lord, sir. Is she going to keep that up all night?
Well, if she is, I wish she'd tell what the joke is so we can laugh with her. Find the light switch?
No, there doesn't seem to be one.
All right, then. We'll continue in the dark. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. Maybe we can find something to sit on.
Yes, sir. Ah.
Hmm?
What's this? I found something.
What is it?
Well, it might be a bookcase built into the wall.
All right. There may be at least something in it that we can sit on. Even books would be better than the cold floor.
Yes, sir. Although I can't feel anything yet.
Keep talking, John, so I can find my way over to you.
Yes, sir. Why don't you strike a match?
Fine chance either of us have of doing that. It'll be soaking wet. Where are you?
Right here, sir. You're almost up to me.
Now, where's the bookcase?
Right here. Let me have your hand.
Yes. Now, let's feel all through it. Maybe something of use in it. You never can tell. What was that?
Sounds like someone at the door.
What are you doing?
Trying to light a match.
Any luck?
No, sir. Just like you said, they're sopping wet.
Quiet now. Let's listen. I must have been imagining things.
I've been imagining things ever since we first heard that old woman laugh like that. It fairly makes my hair stand on end. There it is again, sir. A rustling near the door.
Who is that? Who's there?
Stay away from that bookcase. Stay away.
Who is it? Who are you?
Stay away from that bookcase.
We wouldn't be near the blessed bookcase if he'd be gracious enough to conduct us to a room with some furniture in it so that we might rest and get dry.
Stay away from the bookcase.
He's leaving, sir.
Well, this is a fine how-do-you-do, isn't it?
Oh, I've had about enough, sir. I'd sooner we were on our way.
Oh, nonsense. However, we leave the bookcase alone, if that's what we're asked to do.
He's still hereabouts?
Yes, I heard him. Say, you playing some game with us? If so, we're not in the mood for it.
No answer.
No.
Oh, there she is again.
Yes. That's enough. That's enough.
What are you going to do, sir?
This is some fool game they're playing with us. I'm going to find out about it and put a stop to it. There's a man and woman living in this house. There must be some furniture in at least one of the rooms.
Some heat, sir. I'm chilled to the bone.
Yes, some heat. There isn't, and there's something going on here that we should investigate and put a stop to. Come along, John.
All right, sir, if you say so. Where to first?
We'll start right where we are. Search the whole house. From this floor up to the roof.
Mr. Winton, look.
Where?
Down to the end of this hall. There's the old man who was talking to us in the room downstairs, telling us to keep away from the bookcase.
I think you're right. Carrying a shaded lantern.
Yes, sir.
John, we'll follow him.
Yes.
He'll lead us somewhere. We can't wander in this house all night in the dark.
At any rate, he has a light.
I don't think he's noticed us.
We'll have to get close to him before he turns that corner down at the end of the hall.
Yes.
He's almost at the corner. There, he turned.
Hurry. He might duck into some room close by and we'll lose him. Easy now, while I peek around the corner.
You see him, sir?
Yes. Going into the first room on the left.
Quiet. The air is stale and musty here.
Yes. Never mind about that just now.
That makes me gasp for breath.
Here's the room he went into. Quiet now while I have a look.
Is he in there, sir?
Strange. I'm sure he went in there.
He might be hiding behind the door waiting to pounce on us.
Old man like that couldn't do much pouncing.
He might be armed.
Oh, take that chance. The air is stale and musty here, isn't it?
I can hardly get my breath.
The foul, fetid air coming from that room the old man went into. Well, if he can stand it, we can.
All right, sir. But be careful.
He's not in here. If he is, he's turned out the lantern. Hello. Hello.
There's no one in here.
Huh? The door, John. The door just slammed shut.
Oh, there's no door here. I ran right into a blank wall.
Where the door was?
Right here, yes.
John, we're trapped. Some devil men underfoot in this house. We're right in the middle of it.
In a room with no way out. And no air. No air.
Now, don't start whimpering. We're in it, and we'll have to see what we can do to get out.
But what could they want of us?
How should I know?
What shall we do? Just sit and wait?
No, we'll start looking for a way out of this room right now. If we only had a light. Maybe we can find some other way out of this room.
We can try.
You go to your right, I'll go to the left. We follow the wall around till we meet.
All right.
And tap the wall as you go along. Listen for hollow spots.
No!
Oh. Now what?
I stumbled over something on the floor, sir.
Well, what is it?
I don't know. I shall have to feel.
Oh. What is it, John?
A body, sir.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir. It's the body of a man.
Where is it?
No, don't touch it, sir. Don't touch it.
Why not?
I did. And a part of it crumbled to bits.
Good heaven.
Yes, sir. It crumbled under my touch.
Where is it?
Right at my feet. I'm afraid to move another step.
We'll see what this is.
Yes.
You're right. I just touched it and part of the clothing crumbled away.
Yeah.
And John, I felt bones.
Oh, sir, that's what's going to happen to us if we don't get out of this place. I just know it is.
Yeah, oh, that fellow must have been dead for years. The clothing just crumbled away in my fingers.
Yes.
John, we must get out of this place as quickly as possible. We're in great danger, I'm sure of it. In danger of our lives. We've got to find a way out of this room before we suffocate.
Why don't we try to find the place where the door was, sir?
Yes. Back to the door, John. We haven't time to look for any other exit. We'll have to find out how to open the door we came in.
It's over this way, sir. Right along this wall. Who's there? There's the hideous cackle of the old woman again.
Never mind about that cackle. We've only a few minutes to find a way out of here. When that door closed, it hermetically sealed this room. If we don't get out, we'll suffocate.
What shall I do, sir?
Feel along the floor while I search along the walls here. Feel for any loose boards or any part of the floor that might move.
Yes, sir.
Have you found anything yet?
No, sir.
Keep working. For heaven's sake, keep working.
I can't do any more, sir. I'm through.
Keep searching, John. Keep searching. There must be a secret spring somewhere in here that'll open this door. Did you find anything yet, John? John, answer me. John. He's done for. Don't let go, man. Keep on. Hang on. We're not done for yet.
Suffocating in a hermetically sealed room. Where is the old man with the lantern? King? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
Informed, because that's our boy, the hermit. And I think that was my mother-in-law in the background.
The hermit there, you know who that is? Great radio and television actor, John Daner. He took over the role when it moved to California. At the age of 28, he was the hermit. And actually, you also heard him in the story. He was the one that kept saying, "Stay away from the bookcase. Stay away from the bookcase." You know, that was John Daner as well. So he played a bit parts in here as well as being the hermit at this particular time in the series.
And Paladin.
Yeah, and interesting. You know, the interesting thing about that show is that was probably just about the only radio show that was made after a television show. Almost all television shows came from radio. That show came from television and then was brought to radio, and he was Paladin. He also actually auditioned for Fort Laramie on radio, and his audition program. I have a copy of his audition program. The role actually went to Raymond Burr when the series started up about a half a year later.
Oh, wow.
He also was a regular on the radio Gunsmoke. He was on, like, every week. He was just a... Usually, you know, sometimes he's a bad guy. Sometimes he was just a homesteader. Whatever it was, he was there in Miss Kitty's bar every week, sitting down there.
Yeah, he got a lot of work. I was fortunate enough to hear a lot of his work in the westerns, as well as some of these great old horror shows. And it's just hard to picture Paladin as the hermit, but there he is.
He was 28 at the time. The original guy who was the hermit was Mel Johnson, who was only 24 years old at the time that he was the very first hermit. And one more thing about John Daner radio, he had another radio series also that went on in 58, and it was called Frontier Gentleman. He was a reporter from London who was traveling the Old West and reporting stories back to England about the West of the United States. Interesting thing about that, the theme on there, that which is a trumpet, that was and the music for that was done by Jerry Goldsmith. And you, being a Twilight Zone fan, know that Jerry Goldsmith and Bernard Herrmann were probably two of the most prolific music writers for the original music for the Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, I was aware of that. We did a song about horror music when the show had a different name, and how important it is to media productions like movies and television shows. I love Bernard Herrmann, and it's neat because some of these really early shows don't have the benefit of music. Some of the bigger production shows did, you know, but this relied on sound effects and great voice acting. And as promised, we're going to take some calls here. We've had a certain person here waiting for a long, long time. Welcome to Erie House Radio. Hi.
Hi. This is Dave Nosby, as maybe what? You do too. King Charles.
Hi, King.
Yes, my kingdom is 1,121 feet. Square feet, I'm sorry.
Hey.
But I wanted to ask you about John Daner. Now, I know that he or maybe his son did a lot of Westerns. Is that something you can...
It was him. It was him. Co-starred in several television Westerns, as well as, again, even on the earlier Gunsmoke televisions, he did a lot of those as well. And several of the hour-long episodes, but there were a couple of television series and westerns he was in, even with great comedic timing. He was also in things like F Troop and Hogan's Heroes and things like that. My favorite television role for John Daner was he did four episodes of Twilight Zone.
Really, that many?
Yes, he did.
Well, I think he was a great voice.
Twilight Zone. My favorite of those is Mr. Garrity and the Graves.
Yes.
That was a great episode that he did.
Yeah.
That one.
We have yet another call. Go ahead real quick, and then we'll take a call. Oh, bring it.
Hello. Boy.
Hey, Gar.
It is I, Gar the Ghoul. Talk about the old-time radio. Yes. Great stuff.
Yes, we are.
William Conrad jumped into my head. Someone mentioned Gunsmoke, and I was like, William Conrad did so many voices all over the place. It was just fantastic.
Oh, he was great. I mean, his voice, I mean, just his voice alone, to me, was one of the great radio and TV voices that I've ever heard.
Interesting you brought up William Conrad. For one thing, like you said, he was all over. He did over 7,500 radio appearances is what he has estimated. He was Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke. Almost didn't get the role because he was so well known, his voice was so well known. But you realize on this program, when it went out to California, which is the ones we're listening to here, he started off as the producer-director of this show, The Hermit's Cave.
William Conrad did that?
William Conrad. He started off as a radio writer-director before he did the acting.
Wow.
Yeah, people used to wear a lot of hats back then in any type of broadcasting. If you had a mop but you could talk, they might put a microphone in front of you.
Well, and what a great way for entertainers to make a little extra money is to do all these shows and, you know what I mean, keep their name out there.
It seems to me that it was, not just from the era that we're looking at now, but even a lot earlier on, that there was a lot of opportunities for people to get, their voice on, or, you know, to, like you said, have other roles, producer, director, writer, and so on and so forth. It must have been a very exciting time.
Yeah, I think you could compare it to the period when the talkies went to sound films. Some people couldn't make the cut, and some people proliferated, yeah. during the talking era.
Procrastinated? Proliferated? Okay, yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, but it didn't take long before the great soundtracks started coming out shortly after talkies, and I think that in the same way the transition from radio to television, some of these people that were so prolific, like Cannon, William Conrad, could make the jump, like Daner and many others.
Well, and William Conrad did a lot of directing of television episodes as well. I think he also did narration on two of the greatest television shows of all time. Of course, everyone knows, go ahead, say it, The Fugitive, right?
Yeah.
What was the
yeah.
second series, that second great television series that William Conrad was the narrator for? Anybody?
He had a
Anybody?
Great set of pipes, as did Dana.
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. He was the announcer for that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Rocky and Bullwinkle had a number of great voices, including Hans Conried and, what's the other
mm-hmm.
gentleman? Sir L. Everett Horton.
Everett Horton. One of my favorite
Edward
actors.
Everett.
Someone just passed away, like in December, that used to be the narrator for Underdog, and I thought he was tied to a lot of those programs as well.
Yes. And so many of those people, you know, especially with the cartoons, those are people that came from radio.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to have the voice,
Yeah, we talked
about
it. Because,
I mean, if you look at radio, radio is cartoons without the pictures, so you just keep going.
Can I ask you a question?
I'm sorry,
I wanted to ask you a question. I know that Wally Cox did a number of television shows, Mr. Peepers and, other things. What did he do on radio?
No,
that's
Dave?
A good question. I thought of that. I really thought of him as more of a actor / movie actor, television and movie. Because even did he also did a Twilight Zone.
He was in Mission Impossible once as well.
He was in Mission Impossible. Yes.
Folded him up into a little suitcase and carried him into a bank vault or something. It was really weird. He was so tiny. He was a very petite man. It was like,
I just remember him as a perennial on Hollywood Squares.
That too, yep.
Right.
Yeah, right next to the...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was. He was on Hollywood Squares.
Sitting right next to that Charlie guy with a funny hat and the mustache.
Charlie Weaver.
Yeah,
the wild man from Mount Ida.
Yeah.
I think, the show that I remember was Mr. Peepers, which is, I think, I'm not sure about this, it might have been Tony Randall's first television appearance. But that I'm not sure of. But
may have been, because also, you know, about the same time, Tony Randall, he had to be just barely out of his teens, was doing the I Love a Mystery shows on radio, the Carlton Morris serials.
Wow, he was in, okay. Yeah, I have those on my computer somewhere. I love those.
I just want to comment, and I don't want to embarrass anybody. Well, yeah.
I've been embarrassed already. No, go ahead.
No, I can't tell you how, I don't know, blessed I feel that David is here. He's a walking book of knowledge about old-time radio.
Well, while I was listening, someone made mention that, oh, gosh, now I'm lost. Hang on. nope, where is it? The Hermit's Cave was one of the first hosted programs, and all of a sudden it rolled me back to the Inner Sanctum Mysteries with your host Raymond and the cheerful Lipton Tea Lady Mary Bennett, you know, and he was always going, well, if you think that's bad, let me talk about your tea, and she was like, oh, stop, you know, and I was like, crazy, and I was like, because he was like really disgusting, and she was like, but it's Lipton tea, and it's like, yeah, whatever, lady. But those were great orators and narrators of horror stuff, those Inner Sanctum, yeah, with your host Raymond.
Well, those shows,
yeah, but
I mean, all those
this predated
shows
that probably 12 years, this predated Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Ah, okay, all right. I bow to your numbers there.
Well, this is the first of a regular series of Friday shows. I wanted to start with one of the earliest known shows, and that's kind of why I picked Hermit's Cave. I thought it'd be perfect. Tonight is Friday the 13th. It's a full moon. I've got a great panel of guests along here.
Weirdos, you can say it. No, go ahead.
Well, Dave is the source, okay?
I am a cesspool of information.
Well,
yeah,
you're
don't
Yoda.
Stir that up. Okay.
You are
right.
Yoda. Not Yoda, not Star Trek, but you are the Yoda of, you know, old time radio. And
old time radio? I know, yes.
College of radio.
Right.
Was that Fozzie Bear? Is he been
it was Fozzie Bear.
I said Yoda. I didn't say anything bad.
It was Yoda with a hyena.
Yeah, I mean, Dave, I've known Dave for so long now, and I'm constantly amazed at what he brings up. And, Dave, don't say vomit.
Yeah, well, you know what? If I don't know, I just make it up, so.
I know.
Ooh, very smooth.
I talked to Dave. And, I mean, he'll just throw non-sequiturs or one-liners at me, and I just have to laugh. You know, that's where, his show, The Weirdness Really Bad Movie, that's the charm of that show. And if I may make a small plug for his show, I think everybody should check out WRBM, Weirdness Really Bad Movie, and watch every one of the 83 episodes that exist.
I bow to your numbers.
No, you may not say it, and I'm erasing it now. Hold on. Everyone listening live, forget you heard that. No, I'm
Why? Why? Am I not allowed to promote his show? I love this show.
We're talking about old radio here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Never mind. Back to the show.
No. It is a great show. Everyone knows it's Weirdness Really Bad Movies is one of my favorite, if not my very favorite, partly because of the local flavor, you know, Northeast Ohio thing, but it's just a damn good show. I want to say hi to CW, who commented in the chat here that June Foray was Rocky, which Dave later verified.
Yep.
And that Wally Cox was also in Cole Sheckman, Night Stalker? Or Night Strangler.
Oh, no, the Night Strangler, the second movie, the Night Strangler.
Yeah.
He was, I think he was in the newspaper morgue, you know, where they go to find all the information. I'm not sure. Is that right, CW? That he worked at the newspaper. And I'm pretty sure he was at the morgue and made Carl look back through all the past things. He kept finding things that related this, the villain in the Night Strangler. They're in Seattle.
Yeah, she has confirmed.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you, CW.
And just a real quick question, gang. Does anybody care about John?
John who?
John. Let's go back and listen. What happened to poor John who went missing?
The guy that fell out in the show. Yeah, we need to get back to John.
Yeah, this is the best segues I can do.
Don't forget
so,
the... And don't flush
me. We turn...
Meanwhile, we turn back to John. Yes.
Yes. At the Hermit's Cave.
At the Hermit's Cave.
Fire.
Winton and his man John are trapped in a hermetically sealed room in a house of mystery. Yes, John has lapsed into unconsciousness, but just as Winton is about to drop off, something happens. Listen.
John. John, we've made it. I've found the hidden spring just in time. Now, get you out of here. There. You'll be all right in no time.
Oh, it's you, sir.
Yes. Now, come on. Pull yourself together.
Where are we?
I don't know. But at least we're out of that death trap.
How did we do it, sir?
Just before I went under, I happened on that hidden spring that works the door.
What about the old man with the lantern? And the cackling old woman? And the crumbling body of the man?
We're going to see about those things immediately. I'm going to get to the bottom of this thing. Come on.
And get suffocated all over again?
I don't think we will. Besides, I know where the release for the door is now. Come along. And careful. Take an extra long step when you enter the room. I think we tripped some kind of mechanism when we first entered.
Yes, sir.
Old man with a lantern went into this room and disappeared.
But where can he have got to? If he stayed in the room, he must have suffocated.
He didn't stay in the room. I'm positive of that. Keep your ears open and listen for any hollow sounds.
There's one, sir.
Yes, I heard it. Listen. Don't you hear someone talking?
No, sir.
Put your ear to the wall and listen.
I can't do it anymore. I tell you, I can't.
You hear it now?
Yes, sir. Two people talking.
Yes. I knew that old man couldn't have vanished into thin air. There's another door hidden here somewhere. We're going to find it. Feel for anything movable around the wainscoting. I'll work up the sides here.
Can you hear what they're saying?
No, they're too far away to catch any of the words. However, from his tone, I'd say he was threatening her. Ah.
You found it, sir?
Yes, this little bud on the decoration here.
Look, sir, a flight of stairs.
Yes, and leading down. Come on.
Oh, haven't we had enough for one night, sir, without sticking our noses in any further?
We've gone this far and had an attempt made on our lives. We're going to clear up this business before we leave.
No telling what might be down there, sir.
That's what I'm going to find out. Well, you coming with me, or shall I go alone?
Oh, no, sir, I'm coming.
You can hear them talking a little more clearly now.
You understand that?
No, close enough to make out their conversation.
Now, there are two more up there with Gregory.
Yes.
Man we saw with a lantern. He's talking about us, John.
Yes, sir.
He thinks we're dead upstairs with that body we found.
If you do not continue to obey me, that's what will happen to you.
Oh, no. No.
Cringe. Cringe. That's what I want you to do.
Come on, John. We'll see what we can do about this.
When I'm gone, you think all the money will be yours.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
There's a turn in the passage just ahead. I can see a light shining. Quietly now. We'll be able to see into the room in a moment or so.
Tomorrow, you will bring me another young animal to feed upon.
Yes, Brother Garnet.
It's her brother that's talking.
Yes. Easy now while I look around the corner. What in heaven's name?
What do you see, sir?
Come here.
Great heavens! A coffin!
Yes, a coffin.
With a huge lighted candle at each corner.
And look in the coffin.
A man.
The one we heard talking.
When you get back to your cottage each morning, you wonder where you've been the night before. Don't you? Huh?
There you are, John.
But his lips don't move.
No. But that's where the voice is coming from.
You don't know that I have you under my power.
What shall we do, sir?
We'll dash in there and let matters take their course. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Come on, then.
Lydia, the kangaroos, quick, out with them!
Stop! John, quickly, that cover over there! Slam it on the coffin!
The lady! Look at her! Look at the change that's coming over!
Oh, where am I? A coffin? You too? Where am I?
You should know better than us.
But I don't.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, please believe me. Why, I begin to understand now.
I think I do, too.
It's been this all the time. While I thought it was just a terrible nightmare.
Would you like to make yourself clear?
The coffin. Tell me, who's in it? Who's in the coffin?
You mean to say that you don't know?
Oh, no, I swear I don't.
Well, you called him brother just a few moments ago.
Brother?
Your own brother Garnet is in that coffin.
No. No, how can that be? We buried my brother Garnet over 8 years ago.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
You are...
I'm Lydia Crampton.
Miss Crampton... I would advise you to start at the beginning so that we might unravel this maze.
Oh, I'll try. But not here, please.
Yes, here. If my deductions are correct, it would be better for everyone concerned to get the truth right here and now.
All right. There's very little I can tell you that I know definitely. Brother Garnet died about 8 years ago. I hate to say it, but he was horrible. He was a devil. As soon as father died and he came into the money, he started making my life miserable.
Why?
I never could find out why. Then Garnet died and was buried. And with him was buried the secret of father's will. I know that the estate was supposed to pass on to me after Garnet's death, but I can't find any sign of the will.
What have you done?
I have a small income from my mother. I've been living in a little cottage not far from here. Now comes the part that's like a terrible dream. But I'm beginning to see it now. I'm positive that I'm right when I say that Garnet somehow was able to exercise his will upon me after death.
What makes you say that?
What I've been thinking were horrible nightmares, I now see were actual occurrences. He made me come here every night to wait upon him. He told me that Gregory, his butler, had placed him here in this coffin and had buried a dummy in his place. Then he killed Gregory.
The body in the room upstairs?
Yes. When he had me under his spell, I used to pass through that room and laugh at the remains of Gregory, call him lazy for always sleeping on the floor. To think that I would do a thing like that.
Go ahead, Miss Crampton.
He made me bring him a young animal every day or two.
What was that for?
He fed upon them.
I thought so. He feeds upon the blood of animals.
Yes. He sucked the blood from them. And when he had fed, he had the strength to get out of his coffin for a while.
This is horrible. Stop her.
Oh, quiet, John. Then that's how we saw him in the hall upstairs. Go ahead, Miss Crampton.
That is about all. He used to taunt me by the hour, telling me I'd never come into my inheritance.
I see. When we slammed the lid on the coffin, we broke his spell over you.
Yes, you must have done.
Tell me, Miss Crampton, where in this room are we in connection with the rest of the house?
I don't know. It must be on the ground floor, I suppose.
That's what I was thinking. I have an idea.
What is it, sir?
Hear that?
Another hollow spot.
Exactly. Now, what's this point right here?
Yes, sir.
We'll press it and...
It's opening!
What? Why, it's the bookcase in the front room.
And look at this in the back of the bookcase. A small secret compartment.
Keep away from the bookcase.
The dead body is talking. Talking even with the coffin lid on.
All right, John. We're ready to put a stop to his talking. Here, Miss Crampton, a package from the compartment in the back of the bookcase. I think you'll find it's your father's will.
Father's will?
Yes. Now, John, take those candles out of the candlesticks. Yes. Hand the candles to Miss Crampton. Now, hand me one candlestick and use the other as the hammer.
Yes. But what are we going to do, sir?
We're going to put an end to Gardener Crampton.
But how, sir? What are we going to do with the candlestick?
I'll show you. I'll use the ornamental pointed end of this candlestick as a spear. You use your candlestick as a hammer. We'll drive this one through the heart of that monster in the coffin.
No, no.
But that would be murder.
It will not. He only lives during the night. Go on, strike. We'll release his soul so that he'll never trouble anyone on earth again. Faster, John.
I'm working as fast as I can, sir.
When Miss Crampton told me of his feeding on young animals...
Sucking the blood?
Yes. I knew then that we had a vampire to deal with.
What are you doing? For heaven's sakes, what are you doing?
We're ridding the face of the earth of a vampire. It's done. We've driven the point of this candlestick through the coffin and through the heart of Garnet Crampton, who's long been dead, but whose soul has been held in bondage by the result of his evil practices in life.
Used as a spear, Winton and his man John put an end to the vampire's desire. Yes. Released his soul so it could never again return to the earth. Turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dream.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
What a great little show that was. Hermit's Cave, Vampire's Desire.
Fabulous show.
Not a good ending for the vampire.
Any similarity to real Hermit should be dismissed.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was the woman that did the screaming and stuff like that? Do you know?
A lot of the cast for things like that, they are usually in a lot of these things, they might have listed the main actor. But nobody really got a lot of credit for just doing the regular date, week in, week out, things
Miss
like
Crampton?
That.
Miss Crampton? Yeah. Do you know who played Miss Crampton in that?
I'm, I'm not sure who did the screaming.
These particular shows are not that well. I'm sorry?
I was going to ask if you knew who had played the vampirist in that show. I looked for it, and I couldn't find it.
Now, Precious as Little is known about so many of these shows, and that a lot of the supporting cast in shows like this, those are the people, they were just the regular people who were there week in, week out, and every one of these shows needed a great screamer, so if they could scream, they had a job.
You bet. Well, they did that in Hollywood. I mean, when they auditioned actresses, they would ask them to scream, and some couldn't do it, but some could. And if you could do a good scream, you had a job. Maybe not.
Yeah, that Wilhelm guy, he did all right. The Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, that one became so famous. I can't believe how much that's overused. The Wilhelm scream is amazing.
I think even modern film.
Yeah, they used. If they had someone that could do a really good scream, they would license that voice and say, "Okay, look, we need a good scream here. We realize it's someone that maybe doesn't do this anymore or doesn't want to do it, but they had that scream, and if they had a scream, they had
a good
job."
Who doesn't like a good screamer? Two of my favorites are Faye Ray and Mela Nirma, otherwise known as Vampyra. Her introductory scream was pretty good on her television show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that just knocked you out of your socks when you heard that. It was like, my gosh. Because it's from nowhere. It's not like there's a build-up. It's just, she's going to scream. And it's like, good night. And they got it recorded.
Oh, I know. And you wonder where it comes from. The woman had no waist.
Right. That breeze started from her toes and worked its way up. All the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure she made a few bucks. I wanted to ask you, actually ask you both, in listening to these shows, and I'm not that familiar with Hermit's Cave, okay, but I did start reviewing the show last night in preparation for your show. I'm curious as to how this relates to I guess you would call it the pulp fiction stories, maybe of as early as the 1920s or 30s.
It would depend on how a particular pulp was written. If it was written in a narrator aspect, where you have someone introducing, and now I need to tell you my story, and then it would lead into that. But if it's just the pulp itself, pulp just basically points to an very inexpensively published novel or novella, depending on length. So it would depend on the writer and their point of view in writing, as far as whether they would have an introductory, like you wouldn't believe this story, and then they tell it, they set it up as narrator to telling whatever little adventure they want.
I have to believe that both mediums influenced one another. Because the pulps were probably out there a bit earlier than radio, it's clear in some of the later pulps they started adopting some of the science fiction themes that would pop up on radio. I think it went back and forth for a good period of time. That's merely a guess on my part, but it just seems that way.
Well, I have read a lot of the... I have read a lot of the pulp fiction of... the very early part of the 19th century and, continuing onwards. And I look at the plots and I say, you know what? This would be fine for radio. Now, It's difficult to say. I'm just curious, were there any particular writers that from the pulp era that moved on to radio and either contributed their scripts or wrote for just wrote for the for radio shows?
Well, the main one that comes to my mind to answer your question would be Maxwell Grant, who wrote
the
many
Shadow.
Of the novels, and actually had his hand in a lot of the Shadow things. He was part of the Shadow radio team. He was part of the people behind the Shadow comic strip, which went on until, you know, World War II, and I guess there was not enough ink to print all the black for the Shadow or something. But, yeah, Maxwell Grant is one that definitely comes to my mind as somebody coming out of the pulp novels to radio and beyond.
Okay. That's good to know, yeah.
And you can still find Maxwell Grant. They've gathered together and republished that. You can get that now. You don't have to go digging for an antique piece of its original form. It's now been republished, so it is out there. If you want to go dig up Grant stuff.
How long ago did they republish that? They keep promising to republish them, and they don't seem to do it. I have about a dozen of they made the paperbacks out of them, and with the original artwork that was done for the pulp novels.
You can find the Maxwell Grants right now. They're out. They're in bookstores, but you can they're eBay, and they're all the market saturated with reprinted versions out there now. I checked within the last month for some reason.
Well, Amazon has a lot of old public domain stories, and I think I mentioned this maybe last week. I mean, for 99 cents, sometimes you can get, I mean, literally 1,000 pages of old 1940s, 50s, and 60s science fiction for 99 cents.
And now, do you mean hard copy paper, or are you talking about like a digital version of it?
Digital version. Yeah.
That's why I think it's fun. My wife loves to hit the old antique places and stuff, and I usually go through finding LPs and looking through the magazines and such. That's where I find my time usually spent.
If it's old, it's
wonderful.
It would
be nice to have the books.
On the regular talk show, I'm going to have to do a show on the pulps because, I mean, even you could spend an hour talking on just about the wonderful covers and the adventure and excitement they generated.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what, some of the I started reading science fiction books when I was about, 8 years old, and it was about, I guess, about 1960. And my father used to, but he would go on plane trips, and he would find these 35-cent or 40-cent paperbacks, you know, in the lounge, whatever, and would grab these. And he amassed a collection of almost 1,000 of these books, which he gave to me years ago. And, I mean, when you're 8, well, the problem is it's not a problem, actually. But when you're 8, you don't understand them as much because you're used to adventure stories. But when you proceed onward and if you start rereading them, it's like, oh, now I get it. Okay.
Yeah,
I would I think I understood Chocolate Milk, and that was about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And with about a minute to go here, I want to thank our guest callers today, Gar the Ghoul and Charles. Thank you so much.
King Charles.
And, and of course, my co-host, Dave Binkley.
I'm sorry, that's King Charles.
King Charles, yeah. I'm time for you to abdicate.
I'm just kidding. I'm in.
So from now on, when
my...
you reminisce, Charles, you'll have to say, "When I was just a prince."
Well, I wasn't a prince before that, and I must I'm sorry. I must apologize to. I think there were King Charles of England, no relation.
Excellent.
This kingdom starts here, all 1,121 square feet of it.
And I want to thank our listeners, CW. That does it for our regular time. Stick around for the bonus time coming up in just a few seconds.
Great.
If you're listening in the archives, you can still hear us right now. The regulars can't. The regular live listeners. So, fellas, thanks
for
joining us.
What about the irregular
listeners? Yes.
Still continuing with the Maxwell Grant as far as the shadow. If you go to our friend Google and just type in Maxwell Grant Illustrator and click images, you get some amazing covers from the old pulps just popping right out at you.
Was he primarily an illustrator or
a writer? No, he was a writer.
Okay.
It was combining illustrator with the writer of Maxwell Grant, so that his pulp novel, and it would show the illustrator the cover, because unfortunately pulps were not illustrated that strongly. Correct? It was you had your main cover,
right,
and it was just inexpensive published stuff, and they ground it out or grinded it out as fast as they could. Publish, newsstand, next one, here we go. Right?
Yeah, basically, the artwork was the cover.
Yeah,
that was it. Pretty much it. Yeah.
And there was
I'm sorry, but
I'm a big fan of Robert E. Howard.
And,
like, the reprints of Robert Howard stories have loosely drawn black and white. You know, it's good stuff, but I mean, it's just like you mentioned, they didn't spend a lot of dough on the interiors.
No, well, Robert E. Howard, he had amazing writings, and then you had Boris sitting there doing the cover, and it was like, oh, Boris, oh, my God. And Frank Frazetta, both of those two were bouncing off of the Robert E. Howards when they were reprinted by Signet Books in the 70s, 60s.
Yes, and I own a couple of those, which are actually, again, directly from the pulps, not pastiches like some of the other writers who picked up the Conan story.
That is so crazy that we're right on line with this. Okay.
Yeah, Frank Frazetta, I have a couple of his, I guess you would call them coffee table books.
Right.
Yeah.
But not the crap, I'm sorry, the stuff that other people, you know, collect. But there's at least two volumes, maybe even three, of these, you know, large hardcover books with his artwork in it. And some of it is just stunning.
Yeah.
That's just,
a lot of people that are my age that grew up in the 70s, although we've seen them on album covers like Molly Hatchet.
Right.
And, and the covers of the Conan books and stuff, don't realize how early his career he was doing comic books. He did a lot of stuff, and not just album covers and you know, the reprinted paperbacks. The guy was very prolific, and I guess he left quite an estate behind.
It was sad that they argued about it in the end. There was a lot of litigation going on.
Yeah, I didn't want to get too deep into that negative part of it, but I mean, what an amazing body of work he put together over his lifetime. It's so iconic. I love his work, and yeah, he focused on a lot of nudes and stuff, which of course grabs your attention when you're like 13. What? Ooh, what? But the overall, you know, body of his work and in the fantasy field is just amazing.
You mentioned the Conan stories. Let me ask you both. Were these something that...
There's three of us. There's three of us here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I'll ask all three of you.
Continue.
Were these stories that influenced you from an early age?
Oh, they were...
Yeah.
They took you and put you into a place that you couldn't believe that this one man had in his mind this entire world and all these things that worked in it, and it was like, wow, and it was so much fun. If you're a comic book kid and all of a sudden you get into these novels and you start reading them, it just expands your mind. You just, wow, amazing, and you are thirsty to read more. They're just fantastic.
Yeah. And reading sometimes opens up your mind. I love comic books, but reading a book, a short story, a novel, a pulp, I think you expand your view of these characters more so than when you're enjoying a good comic book or other type of graphic novel.
And weirdly, radio, in sitting there and immersing yourself into the story for maybe it's only a half hour long. I've been listening to Dick Tracy from the 20s or 30s, and they're really short. They're like 15 minutes. And you're like, will he get out? What's going to happen? You really get in there, and it's like, wow, this is exciting. And any one of these, and there's such a long list of radio shows, horror genre, detective, crime, you know, FBI, who are you, and all that, yeah. but you can get into one of these radio shows, and it does the same thing as a novel. It takes you into a place you've never been.
I particularly like that about the Conan novels because they were set so far in the past. And
right.
And you imagined this world in your mind, and you just, you know, it was like kind of a good book. It produces a movie inside your head as you're reading.
Yeah.
You see that movie.
I have a question. I have a question for Dave. While we're talking about this,
yes.
Obviously at least two of us are comic book fans. Of four of us speaking.
Can I change my name to Dave? No, go ahead.
Dave, you mentioned to me earlier as we were prepping for the show how, in the same manner that I was into comic books and horror mags and monster movies, you were delving into radio. Would you agree that, much like reading a book, when one of your senses, like sight or one of your senses is impaired by the type of media that it opens up your imagination? Is that what drew you to your interest in radio?
Well, I think it did partially because I'm also dyslexic, and I didn't know it then. But I'm just saying, reading for me was a lot more difficult. The bringing things in, bringing things to life like that, the biographies and autobiographies, those things I could understand. But a lot of the other things I kind of got lost in because of my reading impairment. I didn't have a reading impairment with radio, and it brought all these wonderful stories to life for me. So that's really kind of wild. While you were reading the comic books are one thing, but when you're talking about the graphic novels and the things like that you guys latched on to, yeah, radio was what I leaned towards and collected and listened to and read up on, because that's stuff that I could truly appreciate in its full form. Well, I couldn't appreciate as much the pulp novels like you guys could.
I'd like to ask Dave a question, or actually all of you folks. I don't recall Conan being on radio. Am I wrong?
Not unless it was
within the last two
decades.
I don't believe he was.
Yeah, unless
but definitely
it did a serial type thing like Tarzan did. I don't believe that he really. It may have been a one or two shot deal if he was there, but Tarzan survived radio, and mostly his were like the Dick Tracy's and some of the others. They were 15 minute serials.
Yes,
I'm quite sure while his work was current that Howard was appreciated, but I truly feel his work was appreciated far more, much in the same way the Lord of the Rings trilogy became far more popular many years after its release.
Right.
Yeah.
After its release.
We had Arnold, I am Conan.
and Howard really never got to experience any success. You know, he died young. He was mired in the Depression and sadly, due to mounting debt, and immediately upon the passing of his mother, he wrote a very poignant poem and put a gun to his head. Unfortunately,
you know, I've seen the Conan movies. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt. You know, if you look at the Conan movies, okay, yes, they're very simplistic and so on and so forth. But then again, to me, the stories were not that complicated, okay? I mean, he was a strong figure. I mean, he progressed to be a king, you know, from just a warrior. And,
yeah.
But, you know, when you look at the movies, a lot of people say, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He couldn't act his way out of a wet paper bag. But that wasn't necessary for that.
Well,
for
that
and movies.
The writing of the film, too, lost me because, and I'm going to speak quite frankly here. I'm sorry, I think Schwarzenegger's Conan was a bit of a wuss. Particularly the part where he is challenging, you know, the villain whose name escapes me, played by James Earl Jones.
Rathasan.
And he complains. He says, "You killed my mother and father," where Robert E. Howard's Conan would say something like, "I mean to hang your head from a bramble," and then proceed to go about doing it.
Right. But one of the difficulties in a film, in my opinion, you're bringing this story that not a lot of people, there's a section of the population, they know Conan right there. You say Call, you say Conan, you say King Conan, they're there. But there's a large portion that are unaware. They understand it's going to be an Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle, and they're going to rush to it.
Yeah.
But then attempting to tell a story, and you have to go, okay, folks, first imagine it's 1,000 years after the sinking of Atlantis, 1,000 years before the birth of Christ, and this is the land, and create the entire mythos. And unfortunately, there is not enough time on celluloid to present an adequate enough information to make it work. So they had to dumb it way down, right?
I was going to make an aside here. And this is kind of maybe going away from, I don't mean to go away from the topic, but Robert Heinlein was one of the people that I read, I mean, religiously. And he published a timeline of his stories. And to me, that was really interesting of his what would you call it? His sense of, okay, this is the future of human history. Almost like a lot of, if you look at the Foundation trilogy by Asimov, he did kind of the same thing, although he didn't publish a timeline that I'm aware of. Is that something that are these two authors that maybe influenced all of you?
No, I did not read a lot of Heinlein. I read some Asimov, but not a whole lot of Robert E.
Yeah, I've been exposed to through audiobooks Heinlein and Asimov, and following through. But each one of them, in order to tell the tale, you have to create the reality upon which the characters live. That's very difficult if you're limited by time. If it's a novel, you're not limited by time. You're not sitting there going, you know, we need to get this scene out in 15 minutes or whatever. You know, you can evolve these things into something much greater than what could be expressed on film.
Yeah, unless you're a hack, there's real no budget constraints on your time.
Yeah, wait, are you saying I'm a hack? What? No.
I'm saying unless you're a writing hack.
All right.
That has to, you know, maybe by necessity, has to crank stuff out in a certain short time frame. I think when you're writing a novel, you have more freedoms.
Which goes back to the pulp writers. They were hacks. They were trying to get print on paper and get a dime. That's what they were doing.
But as fast as possible. Some of them were quite good at it.
Some of them were quite good at it. They were good hacks. There you go.
Well, here's what I can remember. The Doc Savage novels.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, Lester Dent, I think was the guy's real name. he wrote, well, I'm not sure. There's something like 100, almost 200 of his novels. And these are things that I collected, you know, when I was 10. And,
well,
you know,
wait, how old are you? Because these were printed like in 33.
Well, no,
these
were
reprints. The
no,
Signet
the reprints
in the 70s or something. Yeah,
yeah, the 70s.
Okay.
Just for whatever. My uncle used to give me $5 for Christmas, and I would go to the local bookstore, which was right down the street. I could ride my bike, and I had $5 to spend. And the Doc Savage novels at that time were 45 cents. And I could get 10 books for my $5. That's what I did.
What's that?
And I would, yeah, and I would take them home and just, okay, I'm going to be reading for the next three, 4, 5 days.
And you just devour this information because it's so much fun. That's
yeah,
the whole
thing.
Exactly.
We were doing, while we were doing our novels and comic books and such, Dave was researching radio, and they're going to cut us off shortly here on the bonus time. So I wanted to thank all three of you again for being here and sharing
it's
with us. We'll do another show next Friday night at 7:30 Eastern.
All right.
Watch
me. Go ahead.
As far as I know, I'll be here.
All right. We'll keep your eyes on Facebook so you can see what show we'll have for you next week.
Also
right here
on Facebook,
on
Gar the Ghoul.
Yep.
Starring. Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Facebook. Okay, there. I did it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Your show was tremendous.
There we go.
There's boings everywhere.
There's boings
everywhere. Was that one of those Hidden Springs? Was that one of those Hidden Springs, Dale?
It was. I've got Hidden Springs everywhere.
I don't know. I'm not particularly sure I want to know where you're hiding it, but...
I don't know, but it. We're going to go out on Hidden Springs, right? All right.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening to Eerie House Radio. We'll be back tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern with the return of Roxy Tyler.
That's
ooh.
Right.
So we'll see you tomorrow night right here on Eerie House Radio. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.